morning, everybody. Would you call the roll, please?
Trustee Hill.
Present.
Trustee Anderson.
Present.
Trustee Samuels.
Did you verify that the meeting notice was posted as required?
Yes, they were posted.
Thank you very much. First item on our agenda is approval of the meeting, of the minutes of the last meeting. Is there a motion to approve?
I would say approve them.
Is there a second?
A second.
Trustee Hill.
Yes.
Trustee Anderson.
Yes.
Trustee Samuels.
Yes.
Next is the academic and student affairs update. Dr. Westbrooks.
Again, good morning. Well, the first item I'd like to talk about some of the changes that have occurred with the Board of Governors degree program. Specifically, more rigor has been brought to that program as a whole. It's one of the largest degree programs that we have here at the university with over 800 majors. What prompted a very serious review of this program, the program was scheduled for academic program review 2 years ago. At that time, it was recommended that it go up again for a subsequent review, which occurred this spring term. During that time, over a period of a year, there were discussions about bringing more rigor to the program. And even with the implementation of the criteria, it was noted that there were some inconsistencies. Having said that, as indicated, there was a very in-depth review. The first thing that was noted were the continuous concerns that we received from not only potential employers, but with employers, as well as with our graduates. When the question was raised, how can we address these concerns? Chicago State was one of five universities with a Board of Governors degree program. Chicago State is the last of the five to put on the table the recommendation for a name change. The other four universities, they began changing their names of their degree programs more than 15 years ago. Those universities including Eastern, Western, Governor State, and Northeastern Illinois University. Two of the universities changed their names of the Board of Governors degree programs to General Studies. Two of the universities changed their degree, the Board of Governors degree name to Interdisciplinary Studies. Given we currently offer a liberal studies degree program, which is interdisciplinary in nature, we did not want to add more confusion to our students. It was recommended, therefore, that we would be in line with two of the other universities, being that we would go with the title General Studies. The title was vetted with the Illinois Board of Education, IBHE, and at that time, we also had another discussion with them because we wanted to make certain that we were following the appropriate protocol for changes. We did not change any of the admission criteria. So the age, no freshmen will be admitted because they are not required to submit ACTs. All of that remained intact. The number of credit hours remained intact. It requires 120 hours. Where the changes actually occurred, the students now will be required to do a minor. The reason we went with the minor is because we want to ensure that when our students complete this degree, that there is a focus. It's one thing to come in with 90 hours and your courses, they're all over the place. And maybe you've learned a lot, but when you have a focus, you really walk away with a knowledge base, and that was the intent. So as we move forward, and right now we have a committee that is seriously looking at the areas of concentration, because there are two, which is no different than what the program was as the Board of Governors. The students had concentrations where they could select hours. But again, we're trying to make it more focused. The other thing that was added, and this information is in your packet, on the last page we did a side-by-side so that the Board of Trustees would have a quick, glance sheet. And that way you could actually see how we aligned what currently exists with what is being proposed. Our current Board of Governor degree students, for example, do not have to take a foreign language. We kept that intact because we know that frequently when students are returning adults, especially our older returning adults, it is by far very, very difficult for them to be held to the same standards as someone who's just come out of high school who's learned a foreign language. So we did not add that. Again, we tried to keep everything intact regarding admission, but we wanted to bring more rigor. We wanted to have a focus, and as a matter of fact, with the areas of concentration as well as with the minor, these students will be able to leave with a body of knowledge that has a focus. In addition, one of the major concerns raised by employers, they didn't know what it was. So the phone calls that I would receive or my office would receive was, what is the Board of Governors? And only if you lived here in Illinois and you've had some history would you know what that is. Before deciding to recommend to Dr. Watson the degree change, the name of the degree as General Studies, we also wanted to know, is this something that's nationally recognized? And it is. So when we began to develop the curriculum in terms of trying to focus on different bodies of knowledge, we not only looked at what our sister institutions that have formerly the Board of Governor degree programs, but we also looked at what are they doing nationally. So as you can see, I did the side-by-side. I also provided a cheat sheet, some of the typical questions that we anticipate that students will ask about the program. If you have any questions about any of that information, I'm available to respond. And as I indicated, the faculty continue to meet, if possible, and if we're ready. Already we've had several inquiries about when can they get started, and the students, they want to know, can they transfer? We, as I indicated, it's not fair to the students who are currently enrolled in the Board of Governors degree program not to feel that they're going to, number one, be given notification, but more importantly, if they stop out, we're going to hold them to the same guidelines as any other students. If you stop out for more than a year, for 2 years, when you come back, you are bound to meet the criteria that is in place. I mean, that is a university requirement. So we will hold all students. So our obligation is to communicate the changes to the students. We send out over 800 letters as a preliminary to let the students know that the program was under, we didn't label it serious review. But we did indicate that it had undergone an academic review. And we wanted them to start thinking about options. And we gave four. One, that you can complete the program as is, but you would have to complete it within the next 2 years. Two, because what we did is we looked at the students who were currently in the program and where they were in their program in terms of the number of hours they had completed. For those who maybe just started, of course, they've taken only their gen ed. Those are transferable hours. And we intentionally left a large number of hours for electives. I think there are 18. Because we wanted to make certain that students would have an opportunity to use as many of their credit hours as possible in the area of electives. Another option was, of course, they could transfer to one of the other degree programs. Now, what that does is we're going to have to look at, because all of the other degree programs require the foreign language. So that is one obstacle that we will have to look at. But I will be strongly recommending that under the Board of Governors degree program, the students had the option. This went through curriculum. It was approved by the curriculum committee as well as approved and moved forward to Dr. Watson, whereby the students that are currently in the Board of Governors degree program, instead of them completing the foreign languages, they would have the option to complete a speech course, a composition course, and or a technology course, because we know that technology is also on many campuses, and I know a program that I went through, it is considered a language. So yes, it is. Trustee Hill, I saw your facial expression. As it exists now, those students meet the criteria. They have, for those that have completed either the computer course and the speech course, because they had to take 6 hours, they will have satisfied the requirement. So I will have to work with the departments or those programs that whereby the students may want to transfer to those programs. So we will have to look at that to determine whether or not we will indeed waive the foreign language requirement, given they've satisfied the requirement as is within the Board of Governors degree program. Because I think we have to be fair with the students. Right now, it is a non-traditional degree program. And as a non-traditional degree program, and this is consistent with all non-traditional degree programs, they are not held to the same criteria as other traditional degree programs. So you take in consideration what they bring with them. For example, one of the other things that separates a non-traditional degree program from a traditional degree program would be frequently these are students who have been out of school for quite some time. But yet, let's say they entered the field of business. So they have lots of experience in business. Well, they could develop a portfolio and get up to 12 semester hours of credit after that portfolio has been evaluated by faculty in the College of Business. No other program, no other traditional degree program would allow you to get experiential credit like that. So again, we recognize that our non-traditional degree seeking students, they come with frequently career experience, and we want to always maintain that we give them that option if they're willing to put together a portfolio, because it's about being able to document and to show evidence that you should receive credit for that experience.
When are you proposing that this be decided, and what are the next steps?
Right now, the only thing that we're working out, I did not participate in the meeting that was held with the faculty because I want the faculty to make the recommendation to me. It is my understanding that some questions were raised, and I am prepared to address, you know, all of the questions. I think things such as, well, why don't we require them to take the foreign language? That came up. But also, I think as administrators, we must always be mindful and maintain our objectivity, because I'm always mindful of who's asking the question, and to make certain that it's not self-serving, yet it is the best decision for not only our current students, but our prospective students who may wish to enter the degree program. So I need to look at all of it. And once I've done that, I will then make a recommendation to Dr. Watson. Yes, but we want to begin phasing it in as early as January. Right now, we are not accepting any new students into the Board of Governors degree program. And as indicated already, we've started, you know, potential students have begun to inquire. We're not at the stage where we're really able to post anything. I wanted an opportunity to bring it to this body first. Dr. Watson and I have had extensive conversations. We've had an opportunity to, after the program review had been completed, we met with the administrative staff that oversee that program, because there are no faculty for the Board of Governors. The faculty, they offer the courses out of the respective colleges. So I needed to put that on the table as well. I think we met again in June, at which time some questions were raised. Some of the questions were addressed, others were not addressed. And we will be moving forward with some definite reorganization for that unit, because it not only houses, this is continuing education, it not only houses the Board of Governors degree program, but it also houses two other degree programs that are also non-traditional. The University Without Walls, which has approximately maybe eight students or eight majors. Also, we have the individualized curriculum, the ICP program, which has a larger number of majors, but fewer than 50. but we will. Those two programs are up for academic program review now. So we will be reviewing those two programs this fall term. They're on the calendar.
How many students are currently at the
board? More than 800. I can't give you the exact number because, as you know, we're still going through enrollment. But once those numbers have been finalized, I will be able to report back to the board regarding the numbers for all of the majors, including that particular one.
I think one of the key things here is that there's a lot of discussion these days about what college actually prepares its students, or university prepares its students for, and the value that they get out of the significant investment that they and their families make. And I think that this is a real recognition of what has to happen at the connection of where they graduate and where they are employable, and providing them the opportunity to really make sure that they have what it takes to be successful, to get a good job, and all those sorts of things.
I agree. I think it's a step in the right direction.
Trustee Hill? Let me just add some additional comments with regards to support as to the direction that we're going here. And I'd like to commend Provost Westbrook in terms of taking us in this direction. The intent here is to raise the standards. The intent here is to place more rigor into the program. That's the intent. The outcome that we are expecting is a stronger student, a student that will be more academically prepared, and a student that is more prepared for the workforce. That's the intent. That's the outcome that we're looking for. And that's why you see a strengthening, adding additional courses, you know, strengthening the curricula. Second, it is a restructuring. What we're doing is we're taking the power and decentralizing it into the various colleges. So the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, the dean of the College of Education, the dean of the various colleges now have an additional responsibility. And they now must integrate this into their total college. So we took a situation where a unit did not have any faculty. They had limited control over the quality of the courses that were being taught. And we're now putting it, giving it to the people who do have a faculty, who do control the quality of the course in terms of the way it's taught, and saying, we're going to hold you accountable. So it is a restructuring. The other part about the restructuring, and I don't want to give a dollar figure, but there is a savings here. There were a number of individuals who were in that unit that will not be needed when it is decentralized into the colleges. But there is a significant savings there in terms of dollars. The other piece is it's a basic concept. Letting decisions be made at the lowest level, the decisions can and will be made. Organizations run strong as long as the decisions are made at that level. And this strengthens that. And the last thing I want to say is jobs. Each program, each sub-program, we are identifying the jobs that are related to whatever program that the student identifies. One of the frustrating things to me, and you alluded to it, Trustee Hill, is I will interview someone for a job, and they tell me their degree, and I say, and what does that prepare you for? You know, what does this cafeteria-style degree actually prepare? Which job did you think you were getting ready for in life? And they look at me, and they say, I really don't know, but I have a degree. So what we're doing is we're attaching those jobs in the market that we feel can relate to it. And the last thing I want to say is that this is phase one. I'm sure after the dust settles, we're going to look at it, and we will tweak it some in a year. And the tweaking will be around making it even stronger. But this is phase one.
Well, first I wanted to say that I'm very happy that this is taking place. I personally, I've always heard the Board of Governors and still didn't know what it exactly was. and I think the minor is good. Two questions were, one was, what will happen to those who formally completed the BOG, a Board of Governors program degree, would there be potential to swap or to change their degree concentration on their resume, and also would there be an opportunity to have multiple minors? So if someone wanted to have multiple minors for concentration focus. So.
Okay, are we, okay, because you're asking me a series of questions. First right. of all, if you've completed the Board of Governors degree program, you've completed it. Should you decide to come back for a second bachelor's, then that would be your option. But there is no swapping.
Okay, great.
When you complete, you complete. Okay, the second question was relative to whether or not to have a second minor. I had proposed, and there was quite a bit of discussion in Provost Council. I have yet to bring that proposal to Dr. Watson, but there was some research done regarding when, if we should allow our students to have a second minor when they've already accumulated so many hours. And we did some preliminary, we looked at some preliminary data. And what we found, we had several students that had double minors. So they were working on the minors, but they could never get to the major. And that really resulted in delaying their graduation. The one thing we don't want to do, yes, we're all advocates for education. But the thing we don't want to do is your purpose is to come and complete your degree. I think this particular program, the way it has been restructured, allows you to have a minor and two areas of concentration. So given your two areas of concentration, what I would recommend to a student, although I'm not, I will not be serving as an advisor, to see what's within it that would complement whatever that minor is, what would complement it. So take advantage of, yet you have another opportunity, you have two areas of concentration. If you want, let's say your major is accounting, and now you want to see what is it like on the finance side or the entrepreneurial side. Having a structure like this allows you to get credit for all of that and walk out with a very wide body of knowledge, but within the spectrum of business. So.
Trustee, the only other thing that I would like to add to that is that one of our concerns with giving students the opportunity to add multiple minors is that we've had a number of students who've accumulated 180, almost 200 hours, and they don't want to graduate. And
I was trying to be diplomatic, Dr. Watson.
and I mean, we literally had to take a number of students this past June, call them in and say, guess what? You're going to graduate. You can't just stay here for what, 180, almost 200 hours and just keep taking courses. And, you know, voila, part of the reason why we got our graduation score up is because we had some people graduate who were just hanging in there. The other piece is that some individuals are using this in a very disingenuous way. And we need to be very candid about that. And it's legal, but it's something that I don't support. And that is, as long as you remain a student, you never have to pay back the loan. So they continue to enroll, never graduate, and they never have to pay back the loan. And that is something that is so distasteful to me. And I've looked into the legality of it. I've talked to individuals at the federal level, and they said, Wayne, there's nothing we can do about it. But from an administrative position as president of a university, what I'm considering, and we're having some discussions about it, is setting a limit at our university. And just saying, guess what? You are not allowed to go beyond this point. Once you get this, you got to graduate. Figure out what you want to be when you grow up, but you've got to choose a concentration and graduate and get out of here. And other universities do that. So that is something that you will probably see at the December board meeting or sometime in the near future.
Thank you.
Dr. Watson, I have a question. This makes me wonder about the advice that students are getting. And I should know this, but I don't. faculty advisor that a student has that would be guiding them through making these decisions and keeping track of the choices they're making in order to do exactly what you're saying.
Provost Westbrook, you want to?
We have faculty advisors do advise them, but we not only have faculty advisors, we also have staff that have been hired full-time, and that's all that they do is advise. As you know, with faculty, they are not only advising, they're teaching, they're involved in their research. So can we do a better job? Most definitely, but that's across the board. We strive to improve. So we will soon have some workshops in working with not only faculty but with staff as well as we move forward to trying to improve advising with our students.
And we will take that is on our radar screen, because if you look at a number of the issues that our university has, a number of them come out of the whole question of advising. And that is something that is on the radar screen that we hope to address before the end of this academic year. And it may be some major restructuring. And that is all I can say at this point. But it may be major restructuring of how we do advising.
And Trustee Samuel, just to give you a little bit of a student perspective, after about 110, 120 hours, the students become their own advisors. So they don't go to an advisor. They just sign up for courses. So, yeah.
But is there some way of requiring this of students? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That they would be required to set a date at a certain time each semester, each quarter, whatever?
That is part of what we're going to look at.
You're looking at.
To
right.
See what we can do legally, what we can do. Without taking away the students' rights, but also what we can do to protect the university. There has to be a balance, leaving students their rights, but also ensuring that we protect the university and making sure that there's not just a vast land in between of mediocrity.
I think it would be helpful to the board to get that perspective on as you look at this from an overall, not just little bits and pieces of the advising, do they tell them this or whatever, but that overall,
yes.
So we will look forward to that.
Yes.
Great, thank you. Next is Higher Learning Commission update. Thank you, Dr. Westbrooks. Dr. Musial.
Good morning. I'll be brief. Over the summer, since our last meeting, the Higher Learning Commission Steering Committee has moved into a new office in this building on the third floor, room 302. You may know it as the legislative room, or at least half of the legislative room. The idea was to get a room that's large enough for us to conduct meetings and a room that could turn into the room sort of accreditation central that will be used by the visiting team when they come in probably 2012, where we will keep all the documents that they would need and we would have access. They would have access to all the technology and support that they need. It is located in the suite of offices of the Center for Teaching and Research Excellence, which we just call the CTRE. And this is very, very important for us because they provide valuable logistic support. We've already purchased a number of computers, laptops, iPads, tables and things for this room, so it's a place where the where we can work, where the groups can meet, and where the team will have the ample space to conduct their business when they come. We've also hired Toyin Osunkoya as a graduate assistant. Toyin was previously a graduate assistant with the successful NCAA certification effort, and she has totally hit the ground running. She works very, very hard. She's a master's degree student in computer science. She brings those skills, and she's helping us to set up the logistics for the Noah Levitt Student Satisfaction Inventory, which we're distributing. I'll talk about that in a minute. She's also helping to work to put data into the live text portal. The live text portal continues to grow, and we accept data from various data reports from various units in the university. We also had Dr. Bernie Rowan attend the HLC Forum on Pathways and the New Criteria on September 19th, early this week. For sure, Pathways is coming. Pathways is the way that accreditation in Higher Learning Commission will take place starting in 2013. So definitely in the next round, we will be needing to go under the new criteria and Pathways. Pathways is a way of making sure that you don't just wait 10 full years between accreditation visits, that you have to have regular reports that are submitted, including one after 4 years. And Dr. Rowan will be reporting back to us at our next meeting on what he found. What we've been doing at our meetings is that each of the criterion committees has submitted a draft. There are five criteria, and we, the steering committee, of course, need to be responsible for the content of those reports. So we've been providing feedback to the criterion committees as they write their second draft. There will be several rounds before the final report is submitted to the Higher Learning Commission. We've also worked closely with Strategic Planning Committee, Dr. Sharp and Dr. Roundtree. We've met with them because, again, strategic planning needs to move forward so that we can write a report, particularly Criterion 2, which is planning for the future. So we work closely with them and have kept abreast of what's going on with them. Also, Dr. Darga is on both committees, and so we get a report from him with regard to that. We also have produced a video. The Professor Notra Chapman of the library, the marketing committee met with some students, SOCUS group, last spring, and we asked the students what we should do to promote HLC accreditation. We were talking about like a 5 to 10 minute video, and they said, no, don't go there. Make it short. So we produced 1 to 2 minute vignettes using student stars. There's six of them, and they're going to go up on Career Connect and on some of the TV screens that are above. And the idea is that, you know, we can always go to college meetings. We can meet the staff. We can meet the administrators. It's the students that are kind of the hardest to reach. It's very important that they're aware of what accreditation is, why it's important, and the fact that they'll be asked to submit surveys and things. So they need to be aware of why they're doing this. So when the team comes, the students are, you know, certainly aware of what accreditation is, what our mission is, and why accreditation is important. Some plans. We are in the data collection process right now. We are we've purchased 2,000 copies of the Noah Levitz Student Satisfaction Inventory. It's just a great opportunity for us to do a before and after comparison. We did the Noah Levitz Student Satisfaction Inventory in 2002, and there's 100 some questions on this, and it gives the students an opportunity to say how important a particular service is on campus and how satisfied they are with that. So we'll be able to compare before and after how satisfied they were in 2002 versus how they are satisfied in 2011, and it's nationally normed as well. We're also going to participate in what's called the National Survey of Student Engagement. This is very different. As opposed to student services inventory, student satisfaction inventory, which asks the students how satisfied you are, student engagement is about, you know, how the students are able to interact with the university. They ask questions such as, you know, how accessible is your professor to you? Do you write papers? How long are those papers? Are you challenged in the curriculum? So it's a difference. It's not, can I find parking spots, but more, you know, am I challenged in my curriculum? So very different things. We have a cohort of freshmen and a cohort of seniors that will participate in the NESI. And as I mentioned, the student satisfaction survey is also going out. We are waiting for the HLC to announce the date of our comprehensive visit. It should be coming shortly. We are hoping that it will be in late 2012. Once that's established, it will really help us to finalize our timeline. We have an approximate timeline. We know approximately when things are due, but once we have a date, then we know that we have 6 or 8 weeks before that date to submit our self-study electronically to the HLC, and we can kind of work backwards and say, here, this is when we have to do this, here's when we have to do this and that. We also, we know that we're going to have the second drafts of our criterion reports due on November 1st, just around the corner. And there, you know, the second drafts are really going to have some meat in them. They'll have a lot of data and so forth. And that concludes my report. Are there any questions?
Great, thank you.
What's the timing for the strategic plan?
We're hoping to present it at the December meeting.
Okay, great, thanks.
All right.
Thank you very much. Next is an update on the childcare center.
Good morning. As you can see, I'm not Dr. Gist. She is on a well-deserved vacation this week, and so I will be reporting for her. There are a couple of items that...
Would you just tell us who you are?
I'm sorry.
So everybody knows.
I'm Dr. Steinhaus, Chair of the Early Childhood and Bilingual Education Department. We have been working together, Dr. Gist and Yolanda Harris and Dr. Jordan and I, on developing a survey that will assess the needs, the childcare needs of the students on campus. And it is, I think it got included in your packet, and we did take it to the Governance Advisory Board on September 8th and had them review it and give us some suggestions, and we're asking the same of you. What it is that we would like to do, our timeline is that we would like to be able to administer this survey and collect the data during the spring registration. And then we will spend the spring, the first part of the spring term analyzing that data. It is our hope, although we're still working on to see whether this is actually possible, that to connect it with CSU Express so that students actually must respond to it before they move on to registration. That will give us the very best data. As you know, sometimes it's very difficult to get anyone, students aside, to respond to surveys. And so we really are looking for strategies that will give us the most complete data for that. The other piece that we need to report on is that there have been two additional child care partnership sites added, and with that 61 slots, which basically nearly doubles the slots for center-based child care. Those slots were just officially approved this week. The city finally, it's been under discussion for some time, but the city finally approved those this week. And Yolanda Harris and her staff have worked very hard. They've gotten all of the students, or the children, entered into the system, and they'll be requesting a approval of a revised budget later on in the meeting. Of the two slots, one of them is very nearby. It's on 103rd and King Drive, and we're hoping that in the future that will provide convenient child care for the students. At this point, there are not students involved in that, children of students involved in that particular site. There are about 10 families involved in the other sites, however, and so that is something that we have begun to monitor, how many of the slots that we have are being used by CSU students and their children. One of the other things that has been asked about is how CSU students will be involved in the programs in the future, and that's something that we are beginning to plan for and to look at. Yolanda Harris has been meeting with the partnership sites to ask them what kinds of assistance they feel that they need. When that's done, Dr. Jordan and I will talk with some of the different programs on campus to see if there is a match between what the sites need and what programs need. So we're looking at preclinical as well as clinical, supervised clinical kinds of things, and what kinds of employment opportunities are available in those sites, so that we can begin to let students know as they graduate that these are viable opportunities to look into. That is about the extent of the report. Are there any questions?
I just kind of a comment, I guess, is that there could be opportunities for internships.
Yes.
So that post-graduation, there would be an experience, much like a teacher learning to, going to education.
And I, we've talked about that. I think sometimes the terms internship and mentorship and so forth there's a little bit of semantic confusion about those terms.
Okay.
But yes, that is.
Excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
I heard you mention about gathering like student data.
Yes.
Right, what student needs are. Maybe we should to talk because we have a lot of opportunity to contact students now through, you know, Facebook and Twitter and such, and we can quickly, you know, gather information.
If we are not able to do this through registration, we will definitely be asking you.
And I mean, that's a viable option too. But
yes,
I know this specifically is an area that a lot of our student body are very interested in, and the more they know about it, I think they would be willing to respond.
I actually had a conversation with a student about a year and a half ago who said she was going to have to leave CSU because there was no childcare on campus and she wasn't aware of any childcare that was available. So I know that this is a very serious concern, and I've just recently taken the position as chair, so I've been a faculty member for 13 years, and I know in dealing with the students in my classes and in doing the advising that I did, that this is a serious concern for many students, what to do with their children.